The city is far from being a large, bustling, vibrant, fully repaired city. It is basically a desolation with a temple rebuilt. And this is where Nehemiah enters into the picture. He is one of those who is a captive. Actually, he's probably the child of someone who was taken away captive. And he works for the government. And the king grants him permission to return to Jerusalem and undertake the rebuilding of the wall. And this is in about 445 BC, which means, folks, that we're about 140 years to 150 years after the destruction of the temple. So just to put it into a little bit of American perspective, in 1864, during the Civil War, William T. Sherman made his famous March to the Sea. Between Atlanta and Savannah, he burned about 60 miles of Georgia. Imagine if, in 2018, that path of destruction was still laying desolate, unrepaired, unrecovered, unbuilt. That's about how much time we're talking between the American Civil War and today, is about how much time has passed from the destruction of the temple to the ministry of Nehemiah. Nehemiah has, during chapters 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12, evidently, been working back in the land of Persia. We know that he is recalled. He is gone for a period of years, and we can debate how long that is. It really isn't an important part of what we're doing this morning. Apart from pointing this out to you, Nehemiah is talking in the first person in chapter 7, and we don't find Nehemiah talking in the first person again until chapter 12. And chapters 8, 9, 10, and 11 are given as historical fact. But he is evidently not there. That's okay. God is doing a great work, and we began to talk about that great work. God began to reinvigorate the hearts of the people, and they assembled, and they wanted to hear the word of God, and they repented, and they fasted, and they made their commitments to return to the worship of the God of their fathers. Chapter 11 then describes when that mentality, right? In chapter 10, you have, we make a covenant that we will do these things. Chapter 11 then and chapter 12 are the follow-up to that commitment. What will happen when God grips the heart of his people and they return to him, and they return to a right worship? It's easy to think of chapter 11 and 12 as just a couple of lengthy lists and to gloss right over them. And they are lengthy lists, but we would not want to gloss over them. For that reason, I want to begin just by reading through them and by doing it in sections. There really is a bit of an arrangement to what we have here, and we want to make note of it. In chapter 11, verses 1 through 24, the emphasis is upon places, cities. The rulers of the people dwelt at Jerusalem. The rest of the people also cast lots to bring 1 of 10 to dwell in Jerusalem, the holy city, and 9 parts to dwell in other cities. And the people blessed all the men that willingly offered themselves to dwell at Jerusalem. Now these are the chief of the province that dwelt in Jerusalem, but in the cities of Judah dwelt everyone in his possession in their cities, to wit, Israel, the priests, and the Levites, the Nethinims, and the children of Solomon's servants. And at Jerusalem dwelt certain of the children of Judah and of the children of Benjamin. Of the children of Judah, Athaiah the son of Uzziah, the son of Zechariah, the son of Amariah, the son of Shephatiah, the son of Mahalalel, the children of Perez. And Maaseiah the son of Baruch, the son of Kalhaza, the son of Hazaiah, the son of Adaiah, the son of Jorib, the son of Zechariah, the son of Shiloni, all the sons of Perez that dwelt at Jerusalem were 408 valiant men. These are the sons of Benjamin: Salu, the son of Meshulam, the son of Joed, the son of Padeah, the son of Kaleah, the son of Maaseiah, the son of Ithiel, the son of Jeseah. After him, Gabbai, Salai, 928. And Joel, the son of Zichri, was their overseer, and Judah, the son of Sanua, was second over the city. Of the priests, Jedaiah, the son of Jorib, Jachin, the son of Seraiah, the son of Hilkiah, the son of Meshulam, the son of Zadok, the son of Merioth, the son of Ahitub, was ruler of the house of God. And their brethren that did the work of the house were 822. And Adaiah, the son of Jeroham, the son of Peleah, the son of Amzai, the son of Zechariah, the son of Pasher, the son of Malchiah, and his brethren, chief of the fathers, 242. And Amishai, son of Azrael, son of Ahasi, the son of Meshelemoth, son of Immer, and their brethren, mighty men of valor, 128. And their overseer was Zabdiel, one of the great men. Also the Levite, Shemaiah, the son of Hashab, the son of Azrakam, the son of Hashabiah, the son of Buni, Shebethai, and Jozabad, and the chief of the Levites, had oversight of the outward business of the house of God. And Mattaniah, the son of Micah, the son of Zabdi, the son of Asaph, was the principal to begin the thanksgiving in prayer. And Bakbukiah, the second among his brethren, and Abda, the son of Shammuah, the son of Galal, the son of Jeduthun, all the Levites in the holy city were 404. Moreover, the porters, Akub, Talmon, and their brethren that kept the gates were 172. And the residue of Israel, of the priests and of the Levites, were in all the cities of Judah, everyone in his inheritance. But the Nethinims dwelt in Ophel, and Zihah and Gispa were over the Nethinims. The overseer also of the Levites at Jerusalem was Uzi, the son of Bani, the son of Hashabiah, the son of Mattaniah, the son of Micah. Of the sons of Asaph, the singers were over the business of the house of God, for it was the king's commandment concerning them that a certain portion should be for the singers, due for every day. And Pethahiah, the son of Mehezabel, the children of Zeriah, the son of Judah, was at the king's hand in all manners concerning the people. So there is a list primarily of places. And then there are places, people from various tribes, in verse number 25. And for the villages with their fields, some of the children of Judah dwelt at Kirjath Arba, and in the villages thereof, and at Dibon, and in the villages thereof, and at Jekabzeel, in the villages thereof, and at Jeshua, and Moholadah, and at Bethphelet, and at Hazar Shul, and at Beersheba, and in the villages thereof, and at Ziklag, and at Makona, in the villages thereof, and at Enrimon, and Zariah, and at Jarmuth, Zenoah, Adullam, and in their villages, at Lachish, in the fields thereof, at Azekah, and in the villages thereof. And they dwelt from Beersheba unto the valley of Hinnom, that is south to north. The children also of Benjamin from Geba dwelt at Michmash, and Ijah and Bethel in their villages, and at Anathoth, Nob, Aniah, Hazor, Ramah, Gittim, Hadid, Zeboim, Nebalit, Lod and Ono, the valley of craftsmen, and of the Levites were divisions in Judah and in Benjamin. So there's certainly a list of people, but the emphasis is upon places. Where did they live? Some in Jerusalem, others elsewhere. In chapter 12, you have pretty much a list of people. And the distinction here is that in chapter 12, verses 1 through 11, you have a list that goes back to 536 BC. These are the people who came up to rebuild the temple. Now, these are the priests and Levites that went up with Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel. So now you got to go all the way back to Ezra, and you got to go into Haggai, and you got to go back into some of the minor prophets to find these people. These are the sons of Shealtiel and Jeshua, Seraiah, Jeremiah, Ezra, Amariah, Malak, Hattush, Shechaniah, Rehum, Merimoth, Iddo, Ginnetho, Abijah, Miamin, Maadiah, Balga, Shemaiah, Joirib, Jediah, Salu, Amok, Hilkiah, Jediah. These were the chief of the priests and of their brethren in the days of Jeshua. Moreover, the Levites, Jeshua, Binui, Kadmiel, Sherebiah, Judah, and Mattaniah, which was over the thanksgiving, he and his brethren. Also Bekbukiah and Uni, their brethren, were over against them in the watches. And Jeshua begat Joachim. Joachim also begat Eliashib. And Eliashib begat Joiada. And Joiada begat Jonathan. And Jonathan begat Jaddua. Then in verse number 12 down through verse 26 is a list of the priests who succeeded them. So now the time has passed. You have that little bit of genealogy. And these are the people beginning then in verse 12. And in the days of Joachim were priests, the chief of the fathers of Seraiah, Meraiah, Jeremiah, Hananiah, of Ezra, Meshulam, Amariah, Johanan, of Melechu, Jonathan, of Shebaniah, Joseph, of Haram, Adna, of Meraioth, Helkai, of Iddo, Zechariah, of Ginnathon, Meshulam, of Abijah, Zichri, of Miniamin, of Moadiah, Piltai, of Bilgah, Shammua, of Shemaiah, Jehonathan, and of Joirah, Mattani, of Jedi, Uzai, of Salai, Kalai, of Amok, Eber, of Hilkiah, Hashabiah, and of Jediah, Nethaneel. The Levites in the days of Eliashib, Joiada, and Johanan, and Jaddus were recorded chief of the fathers, also the priests of the reign of Darius the Persian. The sons of Levi, the chief of the fathers, were written in the book of the Chronicles, even until the days of Johanan, the son of Eliashib. And the chief of the Levites, Hashabiah, Sherebiah, and Jeshua, the son of Kadmiel, with their brethren over against them, to praise and to give thanks according to the commandment of David, the man of God, ward over against ward. Mattaniah and Bakbukiah, Obadiah, Meshulam, Talmon, Akub were porters keeping the ward at the thresholds of the gates. These were in the days of Joachim, the son of Jeshua, the son of Jozadak, and in the days of Nehemiah the governor, and of Ezra the priest, the scribe. So you have two lists there of people divided by a span of years. And then in verses 27 through 43, you have a description of the purpose. Why are we doing this? What is happening? And at the dedication of the wall of Jerusalem, they sought the Levites out of all their places to bring them to Jerusalem to keep the dedication with gladness, both with thanksgivings and with singing, with cymbals, psalteries, and with harps. And the sons of the singers gathered themselves together, both out of the plain country round about Jerusalem and from the villages of Netophathi, also from the house of Gilgal and out of the fields of Geba and Asmavath, for the singers had builded them villages round about Jerusalem. And the priests and the Levites purified themselves and purified the people and the gates and the wall. Then I brought up the princes of Judah upon the wall and appointed two great companies of them that gave thanks, whereof one went on the right hand of the wall toward the dung gate. After them went Hoshaziah and half of the princes of Judah, and Azariah, Ezra, and Meshulam, Judah and Benjamin, Shemaiah and Jeremiah, certain of the priests, sons with trumpets, namely Zechariah, the son of Jonathan, the son of Shemaiah, the son of Mattaniah, the son of Micaiah, the son of Zachar, the son of Asaph, and his brethren, Shemaiah and Azrael, Milalai, Gilalai, Mai, Nethaneel, and Judah, Hanani, with the musical instruments of David the man of God and Ezra the scribe before them. And at the fountain gate, which was over against them, they went up by the stairs of the city of David, at the going up of the wall above the house of David, even unto the water gate eastward. And the other company of them that gave thanks went over against them, and I after them, and half the people upon the wall from beyond the tower of the furnaces, even unto the broad wall, and from above the gate of Ephraim, and above the old gate, and above the fish gate, and the tower of Hananiel, and the tower of Mia, even unto the sheep gate, and they stood still in the prison gate. So stood the two companies them that gave thanks in the house of God, and I and the half of the rulers with me. And the priests, Eliakim, Maaseiah, Miniamin, Micaiah, Eloani, Zechariah, and Hanani, with trumpets, and Maaseiah, and Shemaiah, and Eleazar, and Uzi, and Johanan, and Malchijah, and Elam, and Ezer. And the singers sang loud with Jezrahiah, their overseer. Also, that day they offered great sacrifices and rejoiced, for God had made them rejoice with great joy. The wives also and the children rejoiced, so that the joy of Jerusalem was heard even afar off. And then in verse number 44, down through chapter 13 and verse number 3, there is process. So the list is places, people, purpose, process. At that time were some appointed over chambers for the treasures, for the offerings, for the first fruits, for the tithes, to gather into them out of the fields of the cities the portions of the law. For the priests and the Levites, for Judah rejoiced, for the priests and for the Levites that waited. And both the singers and the porters kept the ward of their God and the ward of the purification, according to the commandment of David and Solomon his son. For in the days of David and Asaph of old, there were chief of the singers and songs of praise and thanksgiving unto God. And all Israel in the days of Zerubbabel and in the days of Nehemiah gave the portions of the singers and the porters every day his portion, and they sanctified holy things unto the Levites, and the Levites sanctified them unto the children of Aaron. On that day they read in the book of Moses in the audience of the people, and therein was found written that the Ammonite and the Moabite should not come into the congregation of God forever, because they met not the children of Israel with bread and with water, but hired Balaam against them, that he should curse them. Howbeit our God turned the curse into a blessing. Now it came to pass, when they had heard the law, that they separated from Israel all the mixed multitude. In other words, folks, so what we have here, right? We have this list of places of where the people had gone to live, and this list of people. And then we have this explanation of purpose. What are we doing? We're dedicating the wall. The book of Nehemiah has the rebuilding of God's people in mind, as told in the story of rebuilding the wall. So we get the people from Jerusalem, and we get the people from the villages, and everybody goes through the necessary ritualization, purification processes, and there is this gigantic celebration. Now, if you recall back, folks, in Nehemiah chapter 4, that Tobiah the Ammonite, one of the enemies, said that the wall was so weak that even if a fox jumped up on it, it would collapse. But what you read, folks, in the list is that you have two large bodies of people walking on the top of the wall. And they are actually walking kind of away from each other, making a circle and meeting up at the other end of the wall. The wall isn't circular shaped, it's very irregularly shaped. And there is the sound of trumpets and the singers and the celebration, and the wall is dedicated. And then you have at the very end this explanation of the process. God has done a great thing. How are we going to keep it going? Now, I didn't really not plan this, folks. I mean, I in no way systematically thought about this. Right, but we come off of a week like last week where we have a Bible school, and what do we begin talking about? We begin talking about what we can do next year. What should we have done differently this year? How can we reach more people? How can we incorporate more workers? How can we have a better Bible school? How can we keep the spirit that we had alive? These are normal human questions. And what we're told here, by the way, in chapter 12, verses 45 and 46, was that they simply went back to the way it was done in the days of King David. They went back a long time, and they said, how did David do it? And David organized the priests and the Levites into 24 different groups so that everybody was organized and there was a process to the whole thing. Now, what could any of this that we have just read, all of these verses and all of these lists, what should we take away from it in 2018? So let me just suggest to you some lessons from the text that we have just read. Number one, we never want to forget that we are a part of something that is much larger than we are. That's not just a trite saying. That is a biblical truth. At any given moment in time, folks, the people of God, true believing people, all across the globe, are a far larger number than we would ever assemble in Westwood Heights. But it isn't just that, folks. We are here right now, the first Sunday in August in 2018. And we are part of something that is millennia old. And we have Bibles that make predictions about the future and tell us how things will end. But there is no text that tells us when things will end. And there could be many more millennia before Jesus brings the whole thing to a conclusion. Always, at all moments, and at all times, and in all labors, we are simply a part of something that is far larger than we are. And we have obligations to the rest of the body, and we have some responsibility to realize that what we think and maybe what we want and the way we would like to do things or have things must at times give way to the fact that it is really not all about us. And I don't mean you. I mean us as an independent local church. One of the reasons, folks, that you have a list like that in chapter 12, which says, I want to give you a list of guys who lived 150 years ago. And it's followed up by, and here's a list of guys doing the same thing 150 years later, is to remind us that there is a continuity to what is going on. We are a part. It didn't begin with us. It isn't going to end with us. It ultimately isn't about us. We are about it. This is one of the reasons, folks, that the Bible lays upon us these responsibilities to talk kindly to each other, to be respectful of each other, even to be respectful of other believers who don't see everything exactly the way that we do. This is why Paul would tell Timothy, don't let anybody despise thy youth. Why would anybody despise Timothy's youth? Because it's pretty easy, and to those of you who are older, whoever that might be, right? It's pretty easy for us folks to develop the mentality that we care more than anybody else has ever cared, and that we work harder than anybody else has ever worked. It's pretty easy to think like that. The Bible won't necessarily support it. The Bible doesn't demean your labor. It's just that we don't get to say we worked harder than anybody else, and even if we did, so what? So you can see Timothy coming into a community, trying to do pastoral ministry as a younger man facing the uphill battle of being disrespected by the older community. I was talking last week, Brother Pat Campbell was here, one of our missionaries to Peru, and we were talking. We're about the same age, and he brought it up. I didn't bring it up. He said, so what's your plan? And I don't know. I'm getting old. That's all I know. Getting old. And don't have a plan. And I don't have a plan. And we were talking, and I said, you know, one of the things I think about is that in America, biblically, mature male leadership is what God endorses in America. The younger guys are highly prized. And he said, one of the beauties about working in Peru is that they have so much respect for the elder people. America doesn't really share that as part of a heritage. I mean American culture. But the Bible does, folks. We are a part of something. On the other hand, right, those of you who are younger should not be intimidated. Let no man despise thy youth, Paul said to Timothy, be an example. Be a hard worker, be a committed Christian. And by the way, it was just a great joy to me. It really was. To see the broad spectrum of ages at something like Vacation Bible School. This is the way church ministry ought to be. This is the way we are supposed to work together, side by side. But it's easy, folks, if we're not careful, over the course of time, to develop the mentality that Elijah had, that nobody cares as much as we do. But we are a part of something that is great. We are part of something that will continue long after we are gone. And our labor should reflect that understanding. Secondly, go back, if you would, to chapter number 11. Second point of application I would make to us. Is that we should be willing to be inconvenienced because of the greatness of the work that we are doing. The rulers of the people dwelt at Jerusalem. The rest of the people also cast lots to bring one of 10 to dwell in Jerusalem, the holy city, and 9 parts to dwell in other cities. And the people blessed all the men that willingly offered themselves to dwell at Jerusalem. Now remember, folks, when they first went back, there were 50,000 people. Now, no doubt there were children born to those 50,000, and the population grew over the 150 years. But in Nehemiah's day, living in Jerusalem was not really desirable. Jerusalem was a big set of ruins with a temple. Besides which, if your family wasn't originally from Jerusalem, you wanted to go back to your own homeland. If you were a Benjamite, you wanted to go to the land of Benjamin. If you were from Dan, you wanted to go back to the north. You didn't want to go just to Jerusalem. You wanted to go home. And so one of the issues was that there just weren't enough people living in Jerusalem to make the city go. So apparently they employed kind of this twin policy. Number one, they said, we need volunteers to go live in Jerusalem. And number two, after that, we're going to have a lottery. We're going to pick people to go live in Jerusalem. Can you imagine what an inconvenience this would be? If we said to you, the Lord said to you, he's not saying this, not. I really need you to live in Grand Island. You said, okay, I'll go to Grand Island. We used to have a guy in church, he's a nice guy, I really liked him. He said to me one time, he said, you know, I've been thinking about joining the choir and singing in the choir, but it would interfere with my Sunday afternoon nap. Didn't even know what to say. I don't know what to say. I go to the book of Acts and I read about men who have hazarded their lives for the name of the Lord Jesus. And then I have a church member that doesn't want his Sunday afternoon nap interfered with. I should not create situations that deliberately inconvenience you. I'm not saying that. I am saying you should be willing to suffer some inconvenience for the cause of Jesus Christ. And I want to be very careful because I realized that last week was a great, and I don't mean a begrudging inconvenience. I'm just saying, how many extra trips did you make to church? How much sleep did you lose? How much was your schedule out of kilter? That's part of the calculation, folks, of what it is like to serve the Lord. I thank you for that. I think the Lord thanks you for that. Don't become a martyr over it. But don't pretend otherwise. You paid a price to do it. There are other things we could do with our time. There are other things we could do with our money. There are other places we could employ our abilities. The people blessed all the men that willingly offered themselves to dwell at Jerusalem. I will go for Jesus' sake. I will do it. I will do it. Thank you for your labor. Thirdly, we want to remember, folks, that God is the goal of all we do. This really ties into with the two of them. We're part of something larger than ourselves. It isn't really about us. There were a body of people willing to be inconvenienced again because ultimately this was about God. And we see that in chapter 12 and verse number 40. So stood the two companies of them that gave thanks in the house of God. This is where we were going. Right? We get on the wall and we come around and we end up at the house of God. Verse number 43. And that day they offered great sacrifices and rejoiced, for God had made them rejoice with great joy. The wives also and the children rejoiced, so that the joy of Jerusalem was heard even afar off. Look at verse number 27 of chapter 12. And at the dedication of the wall of Jerusalem, they sought the Levites out of all their places to bring them to Jerusalem to keep the dedication with gladness. We're supposed to serve the Lord with gladness. Both with thanksgiving, we're to serve God with gratitude, with singing, with cymbals and psalteries and harps, with enthusiastic singing. And by the way, may I say how much I appreciate hearing you sing. Congregational singing, what a beautiful thing. God is the ultimate end of what we do, folks. It really is about the Lord. I mean, as a church, we are His servants. We want to do things His way. We want to be pleasing above all to Him. These people were pure. Verse number 30, the priests and the Levites purified themselves. This is certainly a ritualistic purification, but clearly in this instance it is ritual purification that came from a pure heart. And how pleased God is when people praise Him and worship Him in purity and in gratitude. And folks, nothing that we ever do by the volume of our singing or our faithfulness to the Word will substitute for being a people who are pure in our thoughts and minds. And then finally, from verses 44 through the end, we want to remember that while organization is good and has its place, it by itself is never a substitute for godliness. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but if a screenwriter were writing the book of Nehemiah, it would end at chapter 13 and verse number 3. Chapter 13, 3 is the high point of the revival. Nehemiah doesn't end on a bang. It doesn't end with everybody having good feelings. It doesn't bring us to a nice, touching resolution. Nehemiah ends with a really almost discouraging notation that the revival did not last and the commitment soon eroded. You can organize godly people, but you can't organize them into godliness. The Methodist Church continues to this day, often in religious liberalism. But the success and the continuity of the Methodist Church was in large part the result of the organizational efforts of John and Charles Wesley. John and Charles Wesley were contemporaries of George Whitefield. they disagreed over the doctrine of election and losing one's salvation. Whitfield was the premier evangelist. Ben Franklin said that he was convinced that Whitfield could be heard by 30,000 people. And what he would do is, because Ben Franklin really liked Whitfield, he'd go where Whitfield was preaching and he'd kind of mark out a plot of ground and figure out how many people were standing there, and then he would multiply that to come up with. I mean, he wasn't just inventing a number. But Whitfield was a preacher, and Wesleys were organizers. And the organization continues, but the spiritual zeal doesn't. We want to remember that while organization has its place, it is not a conduit to godliness and it is not a substitute for it. We want to be ever vigilant that we do not just rely upon the mechanics of how we do things to enjoy the blessings of God upon the ministry. When we began this study, however many months ago it was, I made the point then and would stand by it that there are many parallels between our day and Nehemiah's, between our day and Ezra's. Those were men who lived in a day in which God was kindly keeping his commitment to his people, but the glory was long gone. It may be a little bit that way for the church today. God is always going to have a people. God is always going to have the church. But the lustrous days of the church may be past. But God still treasures faithful people who realize that they are doing all things for the Lord and that He is the sum and substance of all things. We do not want to be among those who despise the day of small things, who lament that it isn't quite as great as it once was. We want to be faithful to Him in the atmosphere that we have with Him. Let's pray together this morning. Father,